Welcome to Prolific Living's first podcast. I am so excited to be releasing this first episode for us. I have wanted to add another medium of communication here on the blog for my readers, now my listeners, and here it is. So, to kick things off, I wanted to read a few passages from my favorite book of all time, Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. And here is my hope and my goal in doing this. I would like to ask you to read in your life. I don't mean to read your email, the news, or random articles on the web. All of that is important, but I would like you to read quality writing. I would like you to read timeless classics. This is a tribute both to Leo Tolstoy for what he gave me, and I am sure countless other readers, and a tribute to our literary heritage, which we should celebrate, because I think it's really one of the biggest treasures we have, and it is all free and available to every one of us. So let's get things started. I will go ahead and give you a little bit of introduction to the book before I start. So without getting into the plot, I want to tell you that this book is lessons about family, relationships, marriage. It's life in high society Russia at the turn of 19th century and struggles with the self. It goes through the emotions of human beings, starting with sorrow, happiness, joy, triumph, jealousy, pleasure, guilt, revenge. It's the story of the unforgettable character of Anna Karenina and the world around her. And the writing is exquisite, but it's simple. It's not complicated. It's timeless. It's addictive. It's sweet and delicious. And you will not regret picking up a Tolstoy. I think what makes Tolstoy so timeless is that he is a master at articulating the whole spectrum of human emotion. He can paint the human spirit in as many colors as a canvas can be whole. I think in every passage you can see something that you can relate to, because everything, and I mean everything, that Tolstoy wrote about applies to our life today in one form or fashion. Here we are with Levin and Oblonsky, two of the major characters, and Tolstoy observes them and writes, "Yet, as often happens between men who have chosen different pursuits, each, while in argument justifying the other's activity, despised it in the depth of his heart. Each thought that his own way of living was real life, and that the life of his friend was illusion." In this section, Tolstoy talks about Levin and his position on jealousy and rivalry toward a man who has nearly stolen the one woman that he loves. Tolstoy writes, "There are people who, when they meet a rival, no matter in what, at once shut their eyes to everything good in him and see only the bad. There are others who, on the contrary, try to discern in a lucky rival the qualities which have enabled him to succeed, and with aching hearts seek only the good in him." Levin belonged to the latter sort. When Vronsky meets Anna Karenina for the first time at the train station, Tolstoy writes, "He apologized for being in her way and was about to enter the carriage, but felt compelled to have another look at her, not because she was very beautiful, nor because of the elegance and modest grace of her whole figure, but because he saw in her sweet face as she passed him something specially tender and kind." Some of my most favorite parts of this book are, naturally, between Anna and her lover, Vronsky. Here, Tolstoy writes, "It was the same expression of respectful ecstasy that had so affected her the night before, She had assured herself more than once during those last few days, and again a moment ago, that Vronsky, in relation to her, was only one of the hundreds of everlastingly identical young men she met everywhere, and that she would never allow herself to give him a thought. Yet now, at the first moment of seeing him again, she was seized by a feeling of joyful pride. There was no need for her to ask him why he was there. She knew, as well as if he had told her, that he was there in order to be where she was. Anna's self-reflections, the thoughts and the tortures and the emotions that she puts herself through, make some of the best, the most brilliant passages by Tolstoy. Here, just at the beginning, where she starts to take notice of Vronsky, Tolstoy writes, "She thought with wonder of her state the day before. What had happened? Nothing. Vronsky said some silly things to which it will be easy to put a stop, and I said what was necessary. It is unnecessary and impossible to speak of it to my husband. To speak of it would be to give it an importance that does not belong to it." She remembered how she had once told her husband about one of his subordinates who very nearly made her a declaration, and how Karenin had answered that every woman living in society was liable to such things, but that he had full confidence in her tact and would never degrade himself and her by being jealous. So there is no need to tell him. Besides, thank heaven, there is nothing to tell, she said to herself. Here Anna is torturing herself for her own deception and is disgusted by her husband Karenin, who feeds on this deception, even though he is the unguilty one. Tolstoy writes, "I am a bad woman, a ruined woman," she thought, "but I dislike lies. I cannot stand falsehood, but his food is falsehood. He knows everything, sees everything. What then does he feel if he can talk so calmly? If he were to kill me, and if he were to kill Vronsky, I should respect him. But no, lies and propriety is all he cares about," said Anna to herself, without considering what she really wanted of her husband, or what she would have liked him to be. Nor did she understand that Karenin's peculiar volubility, which so irritated her, was only an expression of the anxiety and unrest within him, as a child that has been hurt skips about, making its muscles move in order to dull its pain. So Karenin needed mental activity to smooth those thoughts about his wife, which in her presence, and in the presence of Vronsky, and amid the continual mention of his name, forced themselves upon him. You will be somewhat surprised with Leo Tolstoy's sense of humor. Here, reading Vronsky's reaction to first seeing Karenin, Anna's husband. "Dear me, the husband!" Only now did Vronsky for the first time clearly realize that the husband was connected with her. He knew she had a husband, but had not believed in his existence, and only fully believed in him when he saw him there. His head and shoulders and the black trousers containing his legs, and especially when he saw that husband with an air of ownership, quietly take her hand. And then later on Prince and Princess Sherebatsky's views on Europe, Tolstoy writes, "The views of the prince and princess on life abroad were diametrically opposed. The princess found everything admirable, and in spite of her firmly established position in Russian society, tried when abroad to appear like a European lady, which she was not, being thoroughly Russian. She therefore became somewhat artificial, which made her feel uncomfortable. The prince, on the contrary, considered everything foreign detestable, and life abroad oppressive, and kept to his Russian habits, purposely trying to appear more unlike a European than he really was." My all-time funny character in all of the book is Oblonsky. Tolstoy writes about him. "Try as he would to be a considerate husband and father, Oblonsky never could remember that he had a wife and children. He had the tastes of a bachelor and understood no others." On the other hand, Oblonsky's wife, who has been betrayed by Oblonsky, has a very different appreciation of life. Here, Tolstoy describes that for us. "Besides, painful as were for a mother the fear of illness and sorrow at the appearance of evil tendencies in her children, those children were already beginning to repay her care by affording her small joys. These joys were so trifling as to be as imperceptible as grains of gold among the sand, and in moments of depression she saw nothing but the sand. Yet there were brighter moments where she felt nothing but joy, saw nothing but the gold. Naturally, women's position in 19th century Russia was nothing to be envied, but Tolstoy tries to put a funny spin on it. Here he writes on Vronsky's military friend's opinion. Here is my opinion. Women are the chief stumbling block in a man's career. It is difficult to love a woman and do anything else. To achieve it and to love in comfort and unhampered, the only way is to marry. How am I to put to you what I think? And he went on saying, wait a bit. Yes, if you had to carry a load and use your hands at the same time, it would be possible only if the load were strapped on your back. And that is marriage. I found that out when I married. I suddenly had my hands free. But if you drag that load without marriage, your hands are so full that you can do nothing else. On describing brotherhood, he writes, these two men were so near akin and so intimate with one another that between them the least movement or intonation expressed more than could be said in words. At present, the same thought filled both their minds and dominated all else, Nicholas's illness and approaching death. But neither of them dared speak of it, and not having expressed the one thing that occupied their thoughts, whatever they said rang false. Never before had Levin felt so glad when an evening was over and it was time to go to bed. Never had he seemed so unnatural and artificial, even with an outsider, or when making a formal call, as he was that day with his brother. And his consciousness of this artificiality and his repentance made him more unnatural. He wished to weep over his dear dying brother, but had to listen and keep up a conversation about how Nicholas was going to live. On the complications of the relationship between Vronsky and Anna and the growing tension, Tolstoy writes, but he could not at once remember what he had wished to say. These fits of jealousy, which had lately begun to repeat themselves more and more frequently, horrified him, and however much he tried to hide the fact, they made him feel colder toward her, although he knew that the jealousy was caused by love for him. How often he had told himself that to be loved by her was happiness. And now that she loved him as only a woman can, for whom love outweighs all else that is good in life, he was much further from happiness than when he had followed her from Moscow. Then he thought himself unhappy, but happiness was all in the future. Now he felt that the best happiness was already in the past. On Vronsky's self-conflict, Tolstoy writes, Vronsky, in spite of the complete fulfillment of what he had so long desired, was not completely happy. He soon felt that the realization of his longing gave him only one grain of the mountain of bliss he had anticipated. That realization showed him the eternal error men make by imagining that happiness consists in the gratification of their wishes. And as a last passage, I would like to close by reading one of the happier passages from some of the better times for Anna. Here Dolly is visiting Anna, and Tolstoy writes, but now Dolly was struck by that temporary beauty which only comes to women in moments of love, and which she now found on Anna's face. Everything in that face, the definiteness of the dimples on cheeks, and the curve of her lips, the smile that seemed to flutter around her face, the light in her eyes, the grace and swiftness of her movements, the fullness of her voice, even the manner in which she replied, half crossly, half kindly, to those who asked permission to do something with her. Everything about her was peculiarly attractive. Those were just a fraction of my favorite passages from Anna Karenina. I hope that you enjoyed the reading, and I really hope that in listening, you could hear that these themes Tolstoy explores, they are not just timeless, but also universal. He explores the entire spectrum of human emotion, spirit, and character, and he does it in exquisite language. I think that most of all, I learned from Tolstoy. It's not just beautiful writing and a pleasure to read, but it's an education in itself. I would like to continue the podcasts, but more than anything, I would like your feedback, and I would like to know that this brings some value to you. I'm still exploring on what topics and ideas I would like to talk. For all of that, I welcome your opinions. So with that, I would like to close the first podcast for Prolific Living, and thank you for listening.